But I think we will call the teleclass to order. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Weber Training teleclass entitled Infections in the Elderly. And today our speaker is Christine Nutty. Christine and I actually have spent time together at various conferences. We were in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada, doing an infection control conference there together, and we were also over in England at an infection control conference there. We're both speakers on the same agenda. Christine Nutty is president of Infection Advice Incorporated, and she was the 2009 president of the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology, or APIC. She's talking to us today from her hometown of Clarksville, Tennessee, which she informs me is rather foggy today. So without further ado, I'd like to turn the conference over to Christine Nutty.
Thanks, Jim. Actually, my home is in Metropolis, Illinois, home of Superman. And I will just go ahead and get started, and I will try to continue to refer to the slide numbers as I go. And I'm going to go ahead and start with the objectives, slide two. My objectives today, of course, are to talk about what the common infections are in the elderly, the changes that we see with aging and symptoms, and I'm going to look at some of the different infectious diseases that we see in various regions throughout the world, which is a very large view. It's a very high view of each continent or region around the world. So I hope you have the slides or at least have access to the handout. Now, slide three. First of all, I'm going to try to give a partial picture of infections in the elderly because I don't think anyone has a full picture. And these are some of the things that we're going to look at today in addition to the objectives I've listed. A couple of the sources I've used are, of course, the APIC text that can be obtained through our website, the www.apic.org. Beyond Antibiotics, it's a book printed in 2009. Merck Manual Geriatrics is a website, is totally available on the web. And it's a very good resource. And I'm going to mention some other resources as I go, and I will try to sum up those at the end. And I'm going to provide Paul Weber with a handout at the end of this talk that will cover these if you didn't catch one of my sources. All right, slide number four. I think one of the things that we know for sure is that the longer you live, the greater you have, greater risk you have for exposure to the risk factors for infection. And so the people who are killed at a young age by auto accidents or trauma, they don't experience the severe infections, but the longer we live, we do have the opportunity, and we have to work much harder to stay healthy. Slide five, the aging process. I'm going to go through some of the body systems. They're listed right here on this slide, and talk about some of the different changes we see with age in anyone. Okay, slide number six, I'm going to start with cardiovascular system. That was my love for many, many years before I got into infection prevention. We know that the heart valves, the blood vessels, and in general, the heart becomes thicker and it becomes a little more rigid. And as you develop hypertension or diseases of this nature, it hypertrophies. It becomes even thicker and much more changed. But just the normal healthy person, as they age, the left ventricle of the heart, it begins to fill slower. There is an increased afterload. There's increased peripheral vascular resistance. There is increased systolic pressure, the top number on your blood pressure. Any of these things put increased pressure on the heart, and it causes it to become more muscular. It's just like exercising a muscle in your arm. Now, if you have any type of process going on in the arteries or the blood vessels where you develop infarcts, and I'm speaking like the coronary arteries, if you have any type of process there with plaque development and you have infarcts of the heart, it may be gradual, like in the diabetic, or it may be a sudden heart attack, like in the 30-year-old male. But anyway, the areas of the heart muscle that are infarcted, during the first 6 weeks, that area is very soft. But after 6 weeks, it becomes scarred and it becomes hard and more rigid and doesn't pump like the rest of the heart muscle. So it all changes in response to some of your environment and also your genetics. But your environment and your smoking, your exposure to chemicals, they really speed up the aging process. Slide number 7, the aging process on the endocrine system. Now, we know that a high percent of people, when they reach an elderly age, we'll say over the age of 80, have developed type 2 diabetes. Especially with the issues that are occurring in all of the developing country or the developed countries for obesity and family history, the obesity affects much more than anything the development of the type 2 diabetes. Hypertension develops, and especially with African American, Hispanic, or American Indian persons, they have a higher chance for hyperlipidemia or hypertension. Now, the hyperglycemia, it can also cause issues with depression and dementia. It just causes a cascade of events that really increase the problems that the person goes through the older they get. They have disorders of water and sodium metabolism, so they start retaining fluid. That makes it harder on the heart to pump. So it's all connected together. Slide 8, the gastrointestinal system. This system runs from the oral cavity all the way through the large intestine. And you see decreased saliva in the elderly person. You have decreased ability for taste, and you have decreased gastric emptying. You have decreased problems with calcium absorption. And these people, we also see problems with B12 deficiencies and a whole host of issues that can affect the neurological system. They have an increased risk for diverticulosis or the little pouches in the large and small intestine. The hepatic blood flow is reduced. The hepatic drug clearance is reduced. So that is really going to impact how a person can handle medication and the drugs they need to keep their blood pressure under control. They have an increased risk for hiatus hernia. And at some time in our lives, I think each of us have a high chance of having a hiatus hernia or the gastroesophageal reflux. It's just something that comes to all of us with age now. Slide 9. Now, the blood is affected in several ways. The bone marrow begins to decline. And around age 70, we start seeing a decrease in stem cells. So we have a slowing of the erythropoiesis and incorporation of iron into the RBCs. So we have anemia that begins to develop just in the normal, healthy person. We have a slower recovery after healing, you know, after surgery or injury or trauma, we have a slower recovery of blood recovery to the person. So they will tend to stay anemic after a hospitalization where they've had surgery. Some studies say the administration of growth factor will really help this elderly person after they've had a hemorrhage or trauma to build back the blood cells, but that is not totally proven. Okay, slide 10, the eye. We know that tears are reduced, and that's the enzymes that help keep our eyes clean and infection-free. So we see an increase in chronic dry eyes. We see vision damage from that. We see cataracts developing, and a lot of that is because of environment, but also hereditary. And it causes decreased vision. So we see vision loss, we see injury from diseases, and some of those are listed. Syphilis is especially harmful to the vision. Glaucoma can damage it over a period of time without even people realizing that they have the disease. You know, cataract surgery occurs frequently in this group, and as many as 30% require laser surgery after cataract surgery. So, you know, we see a lot of vision changes. Slide number 11. I like this slide because we really point out the fact that falls do occur much more often. And besides the trauma that the person goes through, is the reason for the falls. Those things occur, such as the syncope and the dizziness, the disequilibrium. It hits 33% of persons over the age of 70 to 80. And this is something that happens in the normal healthy person, not even the person that has severe disease. So it is compounded in the person who has disease. Now, just falling and getting the injuries is not the issue here that we're focusing on. It's the infection risk. And any of the people who have to have surgery for falls, repairs, and repairs of fractured bones, pinning, hips, things like that, that's the most common type of surgery that occurs with people in this category that end up with implants put in. Okay, slide number 12, we're into more of the musculoskeletal issues. And, of course, with the changes in the bone marrow, we know that also the bone density is much less. We know that the muscles tend to, they tend to decrease. And I think anyone in the audience who is over the age of 50 or 60 can tell that the layers of the dermis and the epidermis are thinning, and you can see that you don't have a muscle underneath that. You know, we have problems with cartilage, so people even above the age 60 group who don't have orthopedic injuries or musculoskeletal injuries, they have problems with their joints and their bones and issues with, activity, pain on activity and erosion on the surfaces. And a lot of these require surgery for these conditions. All right, slide number 13. Now, I've found a lot of interesting facts about the muscles related to antibiotic production and wound healing in a book, and it is referenced on your slide, the Beyond Antibiotics by M. Schmidt. It gives quite a bit of information related to how the normal muscle helps and how important it is when the body is exposed to any type of germ or, microbe. We have amino acids that are released by the muscles that are required for new white cells. They produce the cytokines. They release the antibodies. And these are very important during a time when you might have an infection develop. So if you have very low muscle mass, which you have reduced muscle mass in the elderly person, then you're going to have less ability to produce those cytokines. You're going to have less ability to produce antibodies when they're exposed to germs, whether it's the flu or a surgical site infection, any type of infection. They're going to have less ability to fight that infection. And then slide 14, just a loss of a 10% lean body mass results in a decreased immune function. And anyone who's ever had surgery knows how fast, if you are laying in a bed in a hospital, how fast you lose muscle mass. And that's just a normal, healthy person. So you can imagine how fast the elderly person loses muscle mass from decreased activity. Slide 14. 50% of women over 65 who break a hip never walk again. This was a very eye-opening statement to me, and it, again, that was in the book Beyond Antibiotics. I think that's very important to remember. These people who break a hip, they may be in a hospital or they may not be cared in the hospital, they need a lot of support, and there's such a high percent, 50%, it's terrible, that may never walk again. Now, in the center of that slide, these are two extreme examples of how much muscle mass is in a healthy person. A young, healthy male may have up to 110 pounds of his body mass is muscle. And on the other extreme, an elderly female may have as little as 30 pounds of muscle. So if you lose quite a bit of muscle and you are an elderly person, I think an elderly male, and I don't have it on this slide, was about 50 to 60 pounds of muscle. Of course, that varies from person to person, but you have to think about how much muscle was present before they went through a serious major medical event. And then muscle represents 40% of body weight, but 50 to 75% of body protein. And we have to have our body protein to survive. All right, slide 16, the neurological system. This is a very important system, not just for nerve conduction to function and to move and for motion, but it's very important for our thinking. And one of the big things that happens to elderly people is the dementia that goes along with poor nutrition and muscle atrophy and poor skin care and injuries to the skin. I mean, these all go together. So depression and dementia, these are very important. And there's a high degree of Alzheimer's cases in the people who have dementia and vice versa. So there's a lot of gray areas in there. There are four main types of dementia that they talk about. There's primary dementia, and then there is vascular that might be caused by diabetes or hypertension. And then there's a type with Parkinson's, mostly where they see Lewy bodies in the cerebral cortex. And these are protein particles in the cortex of the brain, cerebral cortex. And then you've got other types, too. Now, you'll have dementia that comes with HIV infection, syphilis, of course, cryptococcal meningitis. So there are, and then your prion diseases can cause severe dementia with CJD or Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and they have rapid deterioration. So this is a very important area in the health of the elderly person. Slide 17, the pulmonary system. Around age 55, we begin to lose muscles that help our lungs to function. We have decreasing PaO2 or arterial oxygen levels. We have a decreasing lung capacity. As much as 15 to 17% for every decade of our life. So after age 50, or after age 20, it says, we start losing oxygen capacity even if we are normal and even if you're healthy and you do not smoke and you're not exposed to chemicals. So any type of environmental toxin that you're exposed to accelerates the effect of aging. Now, you've got to have good muscles for your lungs. You've got to have the ability to breathe deep for foreign mucus, foreign material clearance and mucus to prevent infections from developing and the fluid from building up. And, of course, we know there's increased aspiration as we get older, and especially in the elderly person, if they have had any, if they have any decreased activity, if they're laying down more, or if they've had any mild strokes or major strokes. So we see a lot of things that will affect these things. But the lungs are so rapidly affected by normal aging. Okay, slide 18. Now, the skin, we know, changes and becomes thinner, like I said. We know we have decreased sensory perception and decreased wound healing. And we know that in some people, when they're elderly and they're not mobile, they can have a rapid pressure ulcer develop. And what happens is the subcutaneous tissue becomes necrotic under the epidural, the skin. So you have issues develop quickly in the person that's not mobile, and the skin is rapidly affected. If you have erythema and a foul odor, you have to suspect that they have an infection besides the peptic ulcer, I mean the pressure ulcer. If they develop fever, you have to be on the alert for possible osteomyelitis or sepsis developing in this person. And one of the other benefits of smoking is wrinkle development. So anyone who is a heavy smoker for 20, 30, 40 years, their skin is very much affected by smoking. And actually, it's the connective tissue helping to develop the wrinkles. So, next slide, slide 19. Smell, taste are always affected by aging, normal aging. Of course, smoking and drugs, and I don't mean illegal drugs. I mean, the type of medications you take affect your taste. And I didn't realize that there was such a strong relationship between smell and taste until I started doing research on this. But it's all interrelated, and a lot of people lose their sense of taste when they lose their sense of smell, or they're not as able to pick up the fine difference. Say, for example, the difference between the taste of chicken and the taste of turkey. I mean, that would be a very fine discrimination. And according to the research, 40% of elderly have no sense of smell by the time they reach 70 to 80. And what has happened, by whatever source it is, whether it's diabetes, stroke, respiratory infection can cause it, oral abscesses, or like I said, drugs, trauma. It is usually damage to the first, the seventh, the ninth, or the tenth cranial nerve. So not that that changes anything, but those are the cranial nerves involved. Okay, slide 20, the urinary tract system. We know we see decreased renal function. And, of course, some of our medication has to be filtered through the kidneys, so that can be an issue for some people. We know that, according to research that's been done, that between the age of 30 and the age of 80, the renal blood flow is cut in half from 1,200 milliliters per hour, I think it is, to 600 milliliters. And the cortical blood flow is greatly impacted. It's decreased. The glomerular filtration rate, or GFR, is reduced. And it's only about two-thirds the normal rate in the elderly person. Blood pressure that has increased, especially with normal increases that the elderly has, really damage the kidney, and these accelerate the age changes. We know from research that renin levels are reduced by 30 to 50%. That affects the plasma aldosterone levels, and that contributes to fluid and electrolyte abnormalities. So we see all types of changes besides the visual changes, loss of sphincter control, and the bladder obstructions. And slide 21, immunological changes. The normal aging primarily affects the T cells or the cellular immunity. It is one of the important things to help us produce antibodies, and that's greatly affected by the T cells and the B cells. And these are greatly affected by poor nutrition. But now we're talking about the normal immunity, not the person who's elderly, who is on chemotherapy or has HIV infection. That type of person is definitely going to have immunological problems. So next slide. The following diseases on this slide, I'm on number 22, immunity of the elderly. These diseases are usually, there's usually no immunity in the elderly person, because we know influenza, you have to receive that vaccination every year. But the high majority of our elderly people have no immunity to tetanus or diphtheria. So that's something to monitor for, renewing those vaccines. In a large part of the world, there's no immunity for hepatitis A or hepatitis B, and they're much more at risk for TB, and one important note, they should not receive the yellow fever vaccine. They strongly encourage the pneumococcal vaccines, though, for anyone who is in a high-risk group or over 65. And in some studies, they repeat it one time. But it's very important to do a good history when talking to the elderly about the vaccination status and their immunity. Slide 23. The normal symptoms of infection, and I think this is something that everyone is taught who has medical training, but they don't realize it until they get into the field, into the clinical area, that there really are dramatic different responses to infection by the elderly. They have a poor response to temperature, and maybe the only sign you have is confusion. They may be incontinent. They just may be acting normal. They may not be able to perform the normal activities of daily living. Okay, slide 24. The elderly fever response may be totally lacking. If they have a high fever, it may be a sign that they have an overwhelming infection. So it is very important to keep that in mind when monitoring elderly patients in a hospital or in a clinic or outpatient setting that, you know, if they're showing a high fever, it's time to get serious. And then just a mention there about the hypothermia or lowering the body temperature is associated with surgical site infections. Slide 25. I think this slide demonstrates what we call the failure to thrive, and in children it's the same issue, but for adults we have a decreased activity, and you have depression, malnutrition. It all is interconnected. You also have the effects of maybe loss of income or poverty affecting this cascade. You may have the person on increased antimicrobials. You have increased aspiration. You may have the presence of pressure ulcers developing. So, you know, they're all interconnected. Slide 26. Infectious diseases account for a third of all deaths in people 65 or older. Now, I've kind of gone through a lot of the common infectious diseases in some people, but we know that pneumonia causes the highest percent of deaths in those 65 and older. But there's also a great rate of infection and death from influenza, just because it starts a cascade of events that a lot of time lead to pneumonia. Elderly people do get RSV, although it's rarely tested for in the United States. It can be very serious and have very serious cardiac issues. Urinary tract infections and bloodstream infections, a lot of these are interconnected. And we know that the seasonal flu kills 80 to 90%, and that is, besides the fact that even if we give vaccines, flu vaccines to the elderly, sometimes we only see as little as 30% effectiveness in the elderly population. Next slide, slide 27. Risk factors that may play a significant role in the elderly, and I have these over the next two slides. Implantable devices. Of course, the number one device that causes infection and has the highest mortality, the number one device used is the fracture fixation device. The device that causes the highest mortality and the highest infection rate is the cardiac assist device. And, of course, these are going to be found in the developed countries more than the developing, but it would be probable that we could estimate that it would be the same in facilities in developing countries, too. Hip and knee replacements are very common, but they're actually not as common as the hip pinning or the fracture pins. And then pacemakers are common, ports, and all types of devices. If the person has mental changes, the dementia, depression, I think I've talked about that quite a bit, this is a big factor for them being able to prevent infection and to stay active, mobile, and healthy. Staying in a healthcare facility, staying in a long-term care facility, the number of diseases that they have, especially congestive heart failure, diabetes, some of these types of diseases, in these, a lot of times the symptoms are not visible. They're masked from the primary disease, like congestive heart failure will mask the symptoms of pneumonia. A lack of the febrile responses when they have a fever. They just don't develop the signs quick enough for us to be on alert. And then the decreased mobility, slide 28. And then the altered actions of the antimicrobials. You have to look at their hepatic function and their renal function. And then you have to understand that even in the normal healthy person, the way a drug is utilized and metabolized is going to be different. They may have a different presentation for a disease than the normal young healthy person. The environment, a great number of people in the developed countries are living alone, and I'm going to talk about that more, but of course, malnutrition and their immune response are big. Slide 29. Now, I've tried to look at some indicators that would look at life expectancy around the world and healthcare around the world and to think about how that would affect the life and health of the elderly person. And there's a lot of ways to look at this, but if you look at slide 30, down at the bottom of that slide, I've got the CIA World Factbook, and that's the web address for that. And a lot of this information, I know it sounds strange to get it from the CIA, but they really have some great information that they have done around the world. They've gotten a lot of their information from World Health Organization. They have the mortality rates, infant mortality, life expectancy. They have a large analysis of each country. And so what I did is I divided some of the countries and looked at some of them separately. And I think you can see on this slide, the North Atlantic regions have some of the highest percents of population over 65. 13 to 21% in some of these countries. Germany and Italy have 20% of their population over age 65. Up there in Asia, the average is 2 to 9%, but Japan has 22% of their population. Okay, slide 31. And like I said, these are the regions I looked at. I left out Antarctica. Slide 32 is Australia, New Zealand. The life expectancy in this country, in this region, is 80 to 82. Now, I looked at infectious diseases for each country, and their risk is very low. They don't even list any. Now, I looked at their infant mortality, and I didn't put it on the slide, but infant mortality is 4.75 infant deaths per 1,000 live births. And I think you'll understand how good that is when I describe what some of the other regions have. Okay, slide 33, the life expectancy in Asia, because there's a lot of areas that are considered Asia. It covers a wide area. The shortest life expectancy was 45 years, and that's in Afghanistan. The longest was Israel and Japan. The females in those two countries, 83 to 86 years is the life expectancy. The infectious disease risk runs high to very high, and virtually every country has these diseases that are listed on this slide. And I've tried to divide them up between food and water transmitted, vector transmitted, and then we'll also see animal and there's another air, I think. Okay, slide 30. Well, no, wait a minute. On Asia, the infant mortality. Now, remember Australia, I said, was 4.75 per 1,000 live births. In North Korea, the infant mortality is 51 per 1,000 live births. In Laos, it's 78 per 1,000. In Afghanistan, it is 153 per 1,000. So that tells you a little bit about the health care that's being provided in the country. Not that we're looking at infant delivery and all that, but in the whole picture for health care and health of the country gives you a little information. Okay, slide 34, Russia, I put by itself. The life expectancy is quite different for males as opposed to females. So 60 for males, 73 for females. Intermediate risk of infectious diseases, and those are listed. Now, slide 35, in the Middle East, life expectancy is anywhere from 70 to 81. The infectious disease risk is intermediate in Iran and Iraq, and low in the other areas. And then you can see the different diseases, and one of the vector-borne diseases is Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever in Iran. And slide 36 now, the North Atlantic countries, the life expectancy is 73 to 81 with low to intermediate level with the following diseases. So you have a much longer life expectancy there than you do in some of your Asiatic countries. Now, next slide, 37, is North America. There's not a lot to say about that. Infectious disease risk is low. Canada has the life expectancy 81 and the United States 78. Probably our greatest risk is not infectious diseases, but obesity, healthcare contact, surgeries, and car accidents, heart attacks, etc. Okay, slide 38, Central America. There we have dropped down just a little bit with life expectancy around 70 in Guatemala, and the infectious disease risk is high in Guatemala, and the diseases are listed there, the food and water and vector-borne diseases there. Next slide, slide 39. In South America, we've got some countries there that have a shorter life expectancy, 67 to 77. Bolivia has a high risk for infectious diseases. Peru has a very high. Argentina, intermediate. And then Colombia has some of the infectious diseases, too. And these are listed there on the paper with the on the slide with the majority of those in Bolivia, Colombia, Peru, Argentina. All right, slide 40. Now, slide 40 is Africa, and it's intermediate to very high. Life expectancy can be as low as 38 in some of the countries and 76 in some regions. In general, the upper regions or the northern areas of Africa have a lower infectious disease risk, and the higher regions are all the rest of the continent, with some regions very high. And I think you can tell there they have animal rabies, they have respiratory diseases, they have meningococcal meningitis as part of an endemic issue in some countries over there, and TB. So they have more than just the vector borne in the food and water there. Now, slide 41, countries with the highest HIV and AIDS risk, and I thought this was important enough that it needed to be summarized on one slide so that you could see it in print, but you can see how South Africa has a rate of 18%, Botswana 23.9%, and then I also put the population of that region because I think that makes a difference on the statistical value of the actual percent in the country. People living with AIDS, in South Africa, there are 5.7 million people living with AIDS in a population of 49 million. So I think that gives you a picture of the infectious disease risks specifically in that region. And then slide 42 is a slide summarizing the deaths due to AIDS. Of course, we've got the leader at the top, 350,000 have died in South Africa, 310,000 in India, and so forth, and on down through the numbers. But it's still a lot of people in that region that need medication help, and they are not becoming elderly, that's for sure. All right, slide 43 really has no information. It's just a title slide. Slide 44. One of the things that was interesting in the research was to look at the growth of persons in a country that are over a certain age. And the table I looked at called this group elderly, and they were over 60, so I removed the word elderly since I'm pretty close to that. And I think you'll notice nearly two-thirds of the people over 60 are women in these countries. Now, if you're looking at the slides in color on the computer, it's a peach area that gives the percent. But I would say the fourth column over is the estimate for the year 2050 as to the number of people that will be in that country, in the region or country, in the year 2050, over 60. All right, if you look at the developed regions and look across, in the year 2000, there were 232 million in the developed regions, and that is expected to be 394 million by the year 2050, over the age of 60. Now, in the less developed regions, it's 375 million in the year 2000, expected to grow to 1,514 in the year 2050. So you can see the enormous growth in the less developed countries. But now when you look at the percents don't come up as high. Next slide. Now, the number of elderly, I consider this more valuable, is the population of millions of elderly over 80 or over, and in the darkened areas, or if you're looking in color, it's a red kind of color. If you look at the developed regions, in the year 2000, it was estimated that there were 37 million people over 80 or over. And in the year 2050, it's estimated there will be 113 million. Now, in the less developed regions, there were 32 million people and 80 or over, and in the year 2050, it's estimated that will grow to 265 million. So it will be much, much higher. And I think it's an important thing to notice the way the less developed countries, because of the economics and the living conditions, are going to increase so much in the elderly population. It's just a very important, and they're basing this on the way the growth is occurring right now and has occurred through the years. Now, this information came from a United Nations book that I ordered. It's called Living Arrangements of Older Persons Around the World, and it was published in 2005. So I don't know how good the information was before the year 1950 that they were estimating on, but just take it for what it's worth. And then slide 46, characteristics of the elderly well-being. I think it's important, and point number two, in the poorest countries, the older person living alone is the poorest of the poor. And then slide number 47, I want to allow time for questions if there are any. Characteristics of the elderly person. And if you do not have color charts that you're looking at, I'll just explain here. In the less developed regions, the number of people who live alone is around 7%. The number of people, and we're talking less developed, the number of people who live, elderly people who live with their children or grandchildren, is 75%. So that's a huge group that live with their family. But in the developed countries, the people who live alone are around 25%. It's that quarter of the pie up in the right corner there. And the group who live with their families is 27%. So, you know, it's a big difference between the developed regions, between a 75% of our elderly living with family in the less developed and 27% in the developed regions. It's just not as common in the developed countries. So slide 48, another characteristics of elderly who live alone. Of course, the majority of the bars, the first bar in each set is the women. And you can tell a great number of the women live alone, as opposed to the men when they're elderly. They generally are living with family. Okay, next slide. Number 49 is one out of every seven elderly live alone, and these are the rates right now. 60 million are women, and 30 million are men. 19% of older women live alone, 8% of older men. And I think it's because of the desire for help and need, and you know, women tend to be the caregivers as opposed to the care receivers. So, slide 50. I think you have to think about a lot of this information from a high level. It means that the elderly population are going to increase, and they're going to increase quite a bit in the less developed countries. More and more people will be alone or homeless, and they have special risks that we have to be on the alert for and take care of. Now, slide 51, this was an article from San Francisco in the United States about this fellow, and he said the only purpose his nose serves now is just for decoration, and it's because his nose has been broken and he's been beat up so many times, and he is typical of some of the homeless population, and when they're elderly, there's really no one to care for them until they enter a healthcare system. Now, slide 52, what should we do next? Well, I think we have to look at each country and look at our own country and look at the risks for the elderly, the things that will help them and will hurt them, the things they need, look at their risk issues. We have to think about a lot of things, not just shelter, food, safety, and their health care. But we also have to think about their depression and their loneliness and their needs. And that's really all I have planned. Are there any questions? Or I think I will turn this back to Jim. And like I said, I will send all these references to Paul Weber.
Thank you, Christine. A very, very good job. Wonderful overview of our aging population. One of my common statements I use, especially with my mother now that is 83 years old, is getting old is not for sissies. There's a lot of challenges that they face and that we all will face as our bodies start to break down, unfortunately, as we live older. And I'm with you. My definition of elderly changes every birthday that I have.
Yeah.
So once again, I'd like to thank Christine Nutty for her excellent presentation that we have here, and I will bid you all a fond afternoon.
And thank you all for attending.
Thank you,
bye.
Christine. Bye-bye.